Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Good evening, everyone. Are you one of the people that hates the air and water show as much as I do? If you live downtown, it is like you are being bombarded with noise. My two cats are permanently on the ground. They look like cat mats. And I don't think we're going to see them alive again for a couple of days. But anyway, I know everyone enjoys it. And I know my producer, Ben, loves the air stuff. And look, and he's nodding. He just loves this stuff. But anyway, it's sort of like Lollapalooza. Either you like it or you get out of town for the weekend, which is exactly what I did. We have a great show. We're going to be talking to Vic Cohen in just a few minutes, who's a Emmy award-winning producer, writer, comedy writer. We're just going to be talking about stuff for the first half an hour. And then back to school, and a little more serious topic. We have the children in the world now need to be taught about school shootings and terrorism and things like that. And we used to have the fire drills and the tornado drills, but now they have school shooting drills. And we have the expert, the foremost expert in child psychology. She wrote the book Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My. And it's a book that you give to your children and you read to your children about how to tell them about this stuff without it being terrifying for them. Then we have Kenneth Trump, no relation, who is the foremost expert in school safety and shootings. Why are we still having these school shootings? How can they be prevented? Why aren't they being prevented? From the logistics of the doors closing to the prevention, we're going to be talking about that. And then top of the hour, 8 o'clock, as usual, we will be taking your legal calls on any topic you might have. I'm a practicing lawyer, so get your legal questions ready. And it sounds like we're going to have a good show. But I do want to introduce my first guest, who I found loitering basically outside on Michigan Avenue. He's a comedian. He's a journalist. He's a producer. He's a TV writer. He wrote for Joan Rivers and Howie Mandel, my friend Victor Cohen.
Hey, how are you?
Good. It's good to see you.
And yes, yeah, great
so
to see you.
It's a nice summer night. It's kind of sad, isn't it? That I always feel like in August, it's just, although it's beautiful, I feel like it's the end. And I feel those little leaves just start to trickle down just a little bit, foreshadowing what we know is coming.
Oh, but it was like 90 out or something.
I know, but I guess I'm a little negative when it comes to the season ending because I love summer so
much. Yeah, it's been great. It's been my first summer back in like years, 27 years.
Having been in California, where
right.
Everything's always perfect and beautiful.
Well, not exactly. Well, that's because of plastic surgery. Oh. I mean, it's not really perfect. It just looks that way.
Yeah.
Even the trees are fake.
Yeah, is that right?
Everything.
Hey, did you read about this? I saw that in Denmark, they are trying to breed a tree that is glow-in-the-dark. They think that they have the ability to develop a tree that, by virtue of its, you know, its type, will grow and will be a glow in the dark. So what it will take in the sun during the day and it will be sort of solar powered at night.
It's a great idea.
Can you imagine?
I've been thinking we've needed this for years. Actually, you know, when people are texting, it's great because you're never really looking up.
Right.
So if it's a glow-in-the-dark tree, you will not walk in the tree.
Yeah.
I would buy one.
And that'll put away, like, I mean, we don't even need light, you know, street lights anymore. We just have trees that are lit up.
Well,
I like that idea.
I think that they need to start coming up with something to control the weather. Like, I can't figure out. We have so much science. Why can't we make it just rain when we want?
That,
you know?
It, and especially in California where the fires are going crazy.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, take the floods that are going on in the east and kind of transfer them over to where the fires are.
Shouldn't we be able to do that? What's wrong with you people who are scientific? Get to work.
Now, Victor, I want to tell you something. This is something that I was talking to Brian about. A professor at Yale is teaching the most popular course ever in the history of the school and one of the most talked about courses in the United States. It's called Psych 157, The Psychology and the Good Life. And it's students apparently are overwhelmed, stressed, anxious, depressed.
Mm-hmm.
52% feel hopeless. 39% they have suffered from such severe depression in the last year that they have found it impossible to function. So this course is designed to create positive energy, positive psychology in how to change behavior to be happy.
So it's just a class on how to be happy.
That's it.
And you have to pay for that.
And you do. You have to pay for it. But I want to talk about that on the other side. And if anyone has any questions or what do you think about this class? Would you take a class on how to be happy? Why do you think kids are so sad? And I think we should get to what really does make you happy.
It's tuition.
Well, yeah.
It's like 30,000, or what is it, like 100,000 a year?
Yeah, but these kids aren't really paying it, aren't they? They're getting it from their parents or taking out student loans. It's when the student loans hit, that's when you should be depressed.
Yeah, seriously.
For a while. Anyway, yeah. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show. We're going to come back. We're going to be talking more Happiness with Victor Cohen. You're listening to WGN.
Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel.
Okay, I'm talking
like
about this class that Yale is putting on. It's a class on how to be happy. And the teacher says that 50% of your happiness is genetic. 10% of circumstances, like someone just died or you're in poverty or something terrible happened to you, that's 10% of it. But 40%, according to the teacher, are things that you could control, and thoughts and actions and attitudes can change your happiness level. And here I'm talking to Vic Cohen, my friend, who's is a happy guy. You're a happy guy.
Anytime I'm with you, Karen, I'm like oozing with happiness.
It's thick in here. It's
no, seriously.
Here. Yeah.
No, here's the deal with happiness. It's a mistake to ever be too happy. Because, you know, those people are so fake. Like, if someone's over the top happy.
Right.
You know, you got to keep it real. Like, you can't have every day be just like smiling and, right? Don't you think?
Right. But don't you ever, like, I don't get sad really a lot. I am a very happy person. I think it's genetic.
Well, we're going to find out because we both took a test.
We both took a test.
We don't know each other's scores, but.
And actually, I'm going to tell you this. At the end of the show, my producer's going to post the link to the test that you can take. It's a Yale test that all the students get to take about, are you happy? And it's a really interesting, the questions are very interesting, and they're geared toward the end of kind of rating where you rank on this. But listen, sometimes, like, I get upset about something. Maybe I had a bad day at work, or something didn't go the way I wanted it to. Whatever. We've all had it, right? And I just find that if I smile at people, like stupidly in the elevator, and say hello and talk to people, and, you know, I had this happen this week where there was a young gentleman with a camera, and I was coming back from lunch, and he, I said, you know, what are you doing at lunch? He goes, I'm taking pictures of alleys. We post these things. I have this art gallery where I do this. And he was so happy. And I, by the time I got off the elevator going up to my floor, I was completely happy because he was so happy, you know? So that doesn't take much, though.
Me. And also you made him happy. You know, it's
he
like, I love making people happy, you know? Like, it is a good feeling.
So, I mean, I guess, the other thing in this class that I thought was really funny is that the teacher is standing by the door and the kids come for the class. And the teacher says, all right, class is canceled today. You have an hour to do whatever you want that's going to make you happy. And the kids go. And they come back and they report on what made them happy, which is like, it's a great blow off class, isn't it?
Oh, it's the best. Yeah.
Why didn't I have teachers like that?
That's why it's so popular.
But part of the class also, you learn that there was a study done that if you give someone $40 and you say, go out and buy something material, or take that $40 and use it for something else, like going out with a friend or go to a movie or whatever it is, that the people who didn't use it on material things were way more happier than the person who bought something material. Does that surprise you?
No, so what were the people that were buying non-material things? Like what?
No, like an experience, like going out for a drink with someone or coffee with someone, or, you know, using it for something that's more of an experience rather than a tangible thing.
Yeah, like, you know, you were talking about this guy who takes pictures of alleys, you know. okay, but like, I love taking pictures of Chicago, and it makes me happy because what it does is it puts me right in the moment. And when I'm looking in the camera, I have no choice but to be in that moment. I'm framing that photo and I'm taking in life right that second, and that feels good.
Well,
that
it's also creative, and I think people like you, and to some extent a person like me, I'm not as maybe creative brained as you are, but I mean, when you're doing something creative, whether it's writing something for a show or doing something funny or making a speech, whatever it is, I think that it stokes something in you that makes you happy if you're wired that way.
I think, like, also some people believe that, you know, one has to be famous. Some people believe this, like, to be recognized, and that's the sign of success by influence, making, you know, the masses happy. But my feeling is that it's really just I believe if anyone could just make one person smile, it's like one person is the whole universe, as corny as that might sound. And that alone is just so special.
And there's
a ripple that happens.
Absolutely. But there are some people that I think will never be happy. And that's something that I have learned, you know, in the business that I'm in. I'm a lawyer. So do I have people who come to me who are not in a bad situation. Everybody is. They're getting divorced. They're going bankrupt. They've had a personal injury. You know, they've been charged with a crime. I mean, there's nobody who's in a happy situation. But what I find all the years I've been doing this, almost 32 years, is that there are some people can go through all of those horrible things and more, and still be happy and content, maybe not, you know, thrilled with what's going on, but still maintain that base of joy in daily activities. Whereas some people, I look and they have money, they have got beautiful children, and maybe their marriage didn't turn out, or maybe they have an issue, but they are permanently bitter, they're permanently sad, and they're permanently upset with the world.
Right. Well, yeah.
And I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me, but it's how you're wired and how you handle adversity.
Well, also, I mean, for me, some of the pitfalls that I would avoid to stay in a place of so that I don't go into a place of sadness or anger or whatever you call it, other than happiness, is one would be acceptance, and accepting if something's not working, to be in acceptance about that and then take the action necessary to change it. What a lot of people do who end up just in resentment and anger is they're not in acceptance. They live in, why did this person do this? Why? And so self-pity is like quicksand, I believe. And it's very hard to have happiness.
Right. Well, and I think I'm going to say it the same thing, but a little differently. Instead of looking back, you know, look forward. You know, mm-hmm. because looking back, you know, that can make you very, very upset. We want to redo something. Why did this happen? Instead of just accepting it and moving forward. And I think that's hard for people, you know, because again, I'm very sympathetic to my clients and I try to understand their sadness and I try to understand, but I also try to point them in the direction of positive. So if someone says, my marriage just failed, it's 20 years and oh my gosh, I'm going to have to leave my home. I tell them, let's plan it. Let's think about planning your life. Now, I can't plan your life, but right. but think about, where do you want to live? Maybe you want to downsize. Maybe that'll be happier for you because you don't have to mow the lawn. Your kids are going to be in college and you're going to have freedom. Maybe you're going to get a new job. And I mean, there's all kinds of things to look forward to, even when things are right. not going well.
And it starts, you know? And a big part of it is living in acceptance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We had a texter who said, regarding the happiness class, I think it's important to offer, as this country doesn't do a good job about mental health and insurance coverage, and it's going to get worse. And, you know, that's a good point. I think that there are, according to the class, 40% of all people have problems because of either genetics, they're wired in a way that makes them a little sad, maybe they're depressed, maybe they're anxious. Those are things that, you know, to some extent are medical and are physical. And I think our texter is right that we need to make sure that people who are sad, and it is a medical situation, that they're getting what they need, counseling and medicine otherwise.
Well, we took a test, you and I. We talked about this earlier in the day. And I thought maybe, I don't know, is this a good time to... I want to guess what your score is, but do you want to do that now or it later?
No, my score...
So don't tell me yet.
Okay.
This is the happiness, authentic happiness score, and it's from 0 to 5. Is that the one you...
Yeah, that's the one I took, yes.
Okay, great. And I'm going to guess for you,
yeah,
you are a 4.93.
You're real close, 4.46.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why not a 5?
That's
pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I think a lot of the questions were interesting. They were focused on being physically active. They were focused on being successful in life. Not that you're successful, but that you think you're successful.
Right.
I think that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, because, that's true.
You know, someone could say, you didn't do anything in your life. And I could say, well, I think I did. You know, so it's all very personal as to how you view your situation. What was your score?
Well, why don't you take a guess?
I think you're...
Five is like I'm walking around with
you're dark.
Teeth.
I think you're 3.2.
You're close. Jerry, do you have any Jerry's here?
I find that I've known a lot of stand-up comedians, and they're the most depressed people on planet Earth. So I'm going to go with a 2.9.
Wow. Okay. If I were at 2.9, I'd be lying in bed right now, rocking back and forth, which I will be later, actually.
Instead of just sitting there rocking in the chair you are now.
That's true. I'm a 3.46.
Okay.
And I was in a good mood when I took this.
I think the class is very interesting, and someone just texted and said, how much does an average Yale grad make? And I want someone to Google that and call me back and tell me that, because maybe that would make them feel a little bit better about their lives.
Right.
So anyway.
Well, we wrote down, separately, I don't know what's on your list, but I was curious, you know, we each wrote down some of the little things in life, because I think we both agree that the little things in life often bring happiness.
We have 10 seconds. I think spending time with my husband, I think being out in nature, being in the sunshine, having good food, reading a good book, being around animals. Those are my little things. Give me yours, and then we're going to have to take a break.
Finding potato chips or Cheetos on the floor of my car.
Oh, no.
That makes me happy, and I will eat them, and I don't care how old they are, because that's how they were made. They were made to be eaten at any
time.
That's
so wrong.
That's how I am.
Okay, give me two more, and we're taking a break so people can throw up in their mouth.
When I find underpants in my underwear drawer when I think I'm out, that's very exciting for me.
And
when
I
find that gefilte fish is on sale, and I got you a jar of gefilte fish
because
the Jewish holidays are coming up, $3.99 at Jewel and Island Park. This is normally $9.
Thank goodness I have a house in Wisconsin because I'm going to use this for bait.
This is for you.
Because I'm not eating that
stuff. Yes, you are. And your husband. Gefilte fish. It's
Vic Cohen.
Yehudas.
Vic Cohen, we may have you back, but
sweet
probably
gefilte
not.
Fish.
It's good stuff.
Okay.
It's the best.
Hey, Badish is getting it.
Yes.
Badish, I hear you.
This is for you.
Right. The holidays are coming.
You take this.
All right.
And
right.
Have a party.
All right. All right. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN.
Change, change, change. Change, change, change. Change, change, change. Change.
At the top of the hour, we're going to be taking your legal questions. So don't forget, you're going to be calling in at 312-981-7200. Any legal questions you might have, text to that same number, 312-981-7200. On a little more serious note, we have 215,000 children who have experienced school shootings. 217 schools have been affected, 141 children killed in the last 20 years, 287 injured. And in this year alone, 2018, we've had 17 school shootings in this country alone. With us to talk about how do you deal with your children, how do you talk to your children about terrorism, is Carol Lieberman. Carol, Dr. Carol is a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, an author, forensic expert witness, a three-time Emmy Award winner, and she is referred to as the terrorist therapist, an author of Lions and Tigers and Terrorist, Oh My, the first book written about terrorism for kids. Dr. Carol, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, I remember fallout shelters and schools and fire and tornado drills, which were fun because we got to go in the hallway and you know, squat and put our hands over our head, and we weren't scared about those things. Are kids in school now afraid about school shootings?
Yes, they are. It is a little different. I mean, first of all, there were also the hide under your desk for the Cold War drills.
Right.
But there's something a little less personal about the Cold War or fire. Certainly they're dangerous, but when you compare that to a person, a school shooter or a 9/11 type terrorist, you know, coming into your school and aiming their gun at you or exploding a bomb, you know, that feels much more personal, and that's why that's more frightening.
So when you talk to your children, and I guess it's age appropriate, so we have kids who are in grade school, which is different than kids who are in high school, but your book is Lions and Tigers and Terrorists. Is that geared, what's the age group that it's geared toward?
It's 5 to 14, so elementary school and middle school. And that's because, although, yes, kids younger than 5 have, you know, seen things on television, have heard their parents talking, and so on, but when they get to schools, when they start school, they also have their friends talking about things. And so, and you know, it's a very confusing topic. Even adults get confused about it, both school shooters and 9/11 type terrorists. And so between things they see on television and things they hear from their friends, they're just very confused and scared because, you know, they can't sort of wrap their head around it. And so that's why, certainly when they do get to school, you know, there's no way for parents to pretend that my kids, that's the thing. Parents, you know, tell themselves, oh, I don't want to talk to my kids about this because I don't want to scare them and because, you know, I might say something the wrong way and, you know, maybe these things will disappear and then they'll never have to know. And, of course, that's not true.
So can you give us a few bullet points of how you talk to your kids about school shootings, school violence, and terrorism?
Well, the first thing is to acknowledge to yourself that they have some ideas about these things and that lying to them about things makes it all the worse because then they not only are scared about school shootings and terrorists, but they realize that they can't trust their parents to tell them the truth about these things. So you start from that. I call it the birds and the bees talk for the 21st century because it's something that parents feel awkward about, but it's a fact of life. And so, you know, you can, there are different ways to start the conversation. One way would be if there is something on the news and then you, take your child aside afterwards and you ask them, you know, what do they think, what do they think about school shootings? What do they think about terrorists? Do you know what a terrorist is? And just kind of first broach the subject gently and see what, they already think they know. And, you know, maybe they have, they'll undoubtedly have some misconceptions, but see what they think and see what they feel about it. In my book, Lions and Tigers, the first half of the book is for grown-ups, is for parents and teachers and school psychologists, and then and it's all about how to talk to them and how to answer their most frequently asked questions and 88 things that you can do to build resilience in kids. And then they're supposed to share the second half of the book, which is a picture book. And it answers things like, you know, it starts out with what is a terrorist? And I talk about how a terrorist is like the bully, the big bully on the playground. And about how, you know, terrorists are terrorists or school shooters, these are troubled people and unhappy people. And they're expressing their angry feelings on other people because they're jealous, and I give a couple of other different kinds of reasons. I even talk about, you know, I talk about terrorists being radical Islamists, but I say they're not, or radical Muslims, and I say they're not like most Muslims who are peaceful. So the book isn't political. It goes, you know, it's very balanced in that terms, those terms. But I just bring up, you know, I mean, I don't, in other words, I don't pussyfoot around. I get into talking about, you know, the things that they believe in and that they misinterpret the Quran and things like that. So that's one of the things, whether it's school shooters or 9/11 terrorists, parents need to realize that you can't just say that's a bad person. You know, he's a bad guy.
Well, it sounds like what you're doing is sort of using the horror of what has been going on to kind of educate kids on how to think about things specifically and also generally in a light that's fair. You know, that yes. Not everybody is a bad person and not everybody who's Muslim is a bad person, and to kind of sort out what's real and what's not real, which makes sense, using it as a learning experience.
Yes, and also, I talk about how, you know, I think that we can use terrorism as a, whatever its form, we can use terrorism, turn it into a positive in the sense that this is the reason, this is a good reason and a now reason why we have to build stronger nests in our family, you know, in terms of building resilience in children and in the whole, in the family as a whole or in the classroom as a whole. And, you know, kids want to know more than just he's a bad guy. They want to know why. Why is this school shooter? You know, why is this kid my age or a little older than me? Why is he coming in here with a gun? They want to know, you know, more than just, oh, well, you know, he's evil.
Dr. Carroll, I have literally 10 seconds, but we were talking just before you came on about a class that's being taught at Yale for how to be happy, and it's one of the most popular mm-hmm. classes ever at Yale because kids are wildly depressed and the numbers are just staggering. In a very short period of time, can you summarize why you think college kids are so sad?
Yes, I was listening to your show, and it's because of all this. I was thinking that's a great introduction for this. It's because parents, teachers aren't talking to their kids about what's really going on in the world, and they're very confused. They're left alone. They feel very isolated, very confused, and like the world is going to end. And so, you know, and schools, like I've done a lot of talking and at conferences and so on with teachers and school psychologists. The schools aren't giving them any kinds of resources. They do these drills, and the kids cling to them, and they feel helpless as far as what to tell them. And so when they get to college, you know, but this is the result of this.
Dr. Carroll Lieberman, thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell our listeners how you would get the book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists Oh My, for educators and for parents, both?
Yes. First of all, you can get them in bookstores, you can get them online, and you can get them from my publisher's website, which is www.terrorism.com. Foodforkids.com.
Dr. Carol Lieberman, thank you so much for joining this really important topic. Take care. So,
thank you.
Okay. Let's go to, I've got Steve Stone joins the Steve Cochran Show Monday at 8:40 a.m. with his perspective on the White Sox and the rest of the baseball league. Sing it, Aretha. Yeah, I'm a girl of a few words, too. We're talking about school shootings and violence in the schools in light of sort of the back-to-school August that we're having right now. Kenneth Trump is the president of the National School Safety and Security Services. He speaks, he testifies in Congress, and provides all kinds of services regarding the issue of school safety and school shootings. Kenneth, welcome to the Karen Conti Show. How are you?
Karen, good to be with you. Thank you.
Let's get right to it. Columbine was about 20 years ago. We have school shootings that are continuing. Why is this still happening?
We're dealing with human behavior. The good news is we're actually getting better at preventing these incidents. We often don't hear about those that are prevented, but the bad news is we still see some that slip through the cracks. And in my work, I also do a good deal of expert witness work, and while the facts and merits of the cases vary, whether it's active shooter cases, rape, sexual assault, child abductions from school, or other crimes of violence, the common thread is that they involve allegations of failures of people, procedures, and systems, not failures of products and hardware. So this is a people issue.
One of the things that I think that I heard you speak about on various news networks and online is that we are thwarting and preventing attempts at school shootings, but that doesn't get a lot of press. So we're kind of feeling, I guess, collectively that the school shootings are increasing, and I don't know if that's the case, but we, in some ways, I guess, should focus on how some of these school shootings have been prevented and maybe learn from those. Is that being done?
Well, prevention is hard to quantify. It's hard to put numbers on, as we know. And school shootings are, fortunately, low probability but high impact situations. So we know that when these hit, they come to the forefront of the mind or ahead of the news stories. They're embedded in news stories for weeks and months. So it does stay in the forefront of our mind, and it does have a high impact. But Dr. Christine Eich, who's my advisor, Johns Hopkins, in my dissertation program, brought out a great point when we co-presented at our residency a few weeks ago. And she said that we are at a point where we're defining school safety in the negative. The absence of a shooting equates to a safe school. And she talked about the fact that we need to identify what makes a safe school and think about it in the positive way. What are the positive things that makes a school safe? And there are many things that go along with that on a continuum of prevention and intervention efforts, emotional, behavioral, mental health support for kids, dealing with school climate, school discipline, security, policing, a sort of part of that. But there's a lot more to it than just school shootings.
So I want to get to some really quick details here. I want to get right to it. Let's talk about prevention. In your opinion, if you look at all the school shootings that started with Columbine, although that wasn't the first school shooting by any means, if you Monday morning quarterback that, do you see that there was a way to have prevented it? Meaning, were there signs for these shooters? Were there signs, or would you say the majority of them had signs, or the majority of them you wouldn't have been able to prevent?
Well, I think it's easy to armchair quarterback, and that's the challenge, is that we know that whether we're talking about a school shooter or other kids that have many other issues that they bring to the schoolhouse doors, and the kids that are contemplating suicide, for example, which is a really growing concern, is that a lot of people have different pieces to the puzzle, but those pieces are not put together. Those warning signs are not put together in the puzzle until after the tragedy occurs. The challenge is, how do we make those connections? How do we integrate that data? How do we share information so that the piece that the counselor has, the school resource officer, the principal, the parent, can all be pulled together before the crisis actually occurs. And that's the hard part. We're dealing with the people issue.
And if you had, like, let's get concrete. What, I mean, if you had your way, what would be like two or three bullet points? How would you change, whether it's what goes on in the school or what goes on in the community, to sort of give us a heads up when we think this kind of thing might happen? Are there some real concrete suggestions that you have for changes?
Well, there are, but it's not just one or two things, and that's the challenge of this. So it has to be comprehensive and balanced and involve a number of things. First of all, we need to create a culture where kids come forward and tell an adult that they trust. The number one way we find out about weapons is when the kid comes forward and talks to an adult about a plot, a threat, a weapon in school. We need to make sure that we have threat assessment teams training and protocols in place to evaluate different threats and act upon those in a professional way according to best practice protocols. Evaluate security and emergency planning. Diversify school drills. Don't go over the top. Provide emotional, behavioral, mental health intervention supports for students who need services, and a number of other things. It's not one piece, but it's a combination of things that go into prevention and preparedness.
Okay, I'm having a little bit of a hard time hearing you. If you could kind of maybe just talk just directly into the phone. I don't know if it's just a bad connection, but let's take Parkland. And you know, I think this is one where, you know, is there some way, this is just me being very simplified, but why can't we lock down a school so that either where there's fences or locked doors and that nobody can get into the doors, nobody can get in without going through a metal detector, and that the school is secured and safe? Is that something that can't be done?
Well, we see schools creating secured vestibules and looking at physical security measures, and the security product and hardware industry is certainly driving an effort to increase target hardening. But again, in many cases, the shooter is already a legitimate user of the facility. The threat is already on the inside past that secured vestibule. So I think that we can take reasonable measures to reduce access control and handle visitor management and supervise the grounds. But we talk about secured vestibules as one thing at the visitor entrance ways, but if the people leave the doors propped open by the custodial area, the food services, the gym areas, you really don't have a single point of entry in your school. Again, the people factor comes into play. So, and that doesn't take into the fact the kid who's already on the inside that's troubled that really poses the threat.
Right. Ken, thank you so much for joining us. Ken Trump is the author and co-author of three books, more than 450 articles on school safety. And if people wanted to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
Best way to get in touch is through the website at schoolsecurity.org.
Thank you so much. Have a great evening. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show. Taking your legal calls now. This is the time that I will try to answer your legal questions on any topic you might have. Is it a family law issue? Is it a criminal law issue? Is it a real estate issue? Is it something you saw in the news this week that you're curious about? Like Manafort trial, the Pendleton trial, anything that is of interest to you, I'll try to explain it the best I can. The number is 312-981-7200. Ben, my producer, will answer the phone, and he'll ask you to quickly kind of give us a rundown of what your question is, and we'll put you right on the air, try to give you an answer. If you don't get on for some reason, or you'd rather talk privately, I'm going to give you my office number. I'm always happy to take your call, and I'd like to refer you to different places and different lawyers, and if I don't handle a particular matter, or maybe just send you in the right direction. That number is 312-332-7800. Put that in your cell phone. And you can always email me at wgn@askkarenconti.com. And Karen Conti is KarenConti. And if you also have ideas for a show, or if there's a topic that you'd like me to explain, whether it's a consumer-related legal issue or a topic that is of interest to you, I'm always happy to take those suggestions as well. Well, let's go to the lines, 981-7200. We've got Cindy. Hi, Cindy. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. Cindy there? Nope. Okay. Cindy will be there soon. Hi, Cindy.
Yep.
Hi. Welcome to WGN.
Hi.
What's your legal question?
How are you?
Good.
It is my mother-in-law passed away in January, and she has a small bank account in PNC Bank, but she has no beneficiary. There's nobody else on the bank account. She had no will because she was in assisted living. And we were trying to find out how much money is in there or would get the money out of there. We did bring this death certificate there to the bank,
yes.
But they said they couldn't help us at all.
Okay, so it is your husband, her son, correct?
Right.
Are there
right.
any other siblings?
She has a daughter.
Okay.
And she lives out of state.
Okay, and is she on the same page to try to get some information about this account?
Yes, I'm sure there's not a lot in there. If there's even a couple thousand, I would be surprised.
Okay. Cindy, I'm not an estate planning lawyer, but there's a thing called a small estate affidavit, and I believe that's something you can fill out and that you can get that information and get that cash from PNC Bank. But I want you to email me tomorrow, and I will get you everything you need to know about that.
Great.
You can email me at WGN@AskKarenConti.com, and I'm going to put you on hold. Just generally speaking, a lot of people don't get a will because they think they don't have much money. But the problem is when you have a situation like this and you die and you have an account, and I've heard this, they had a car, they couldn't get the car title signed over, they couldn't get the bank account out of the bank, they didn't know where maybe other assets are, they know there's a life insurance policy, but they don't know where the life insurance is, so they don't even know how to make a claim on it because the records are mixed up, and no one has the power of attorney or the right to make those decisions. So listen, do everyone a favor in your family. Have some sort of estate plan, and it doesn't have to be complicated, and it doesn't have to be expensive, and I can give you some names of some people who are very reasonably priced, who are very trustworthy to do your estate plan, but please, please do it for yourself and make sure that your parents and your elderly relatives also have one. 312-981-7200. You know, I think a lot of people don't like to do an estate plan because they feel like that's kind of like a question of their mortality. I think I have a lot of callers who call in and I refer them to wonderful lawyers who do a good job, and those lawyers never get the call. And I always wonder, like, where are all those people who I gave the numbers to? But I do think that some people just don't like to think about their death. They don't like to think about those issues. It's distasteful to them in some way, shape, or form. But it really does cause havoc in families, especially when you have family members who have different views about where things should go and who should get your assets and how your debt should be paid. So, definitely give me an email and I'll help you along and try to get your estate plan in order. Last week we had a question from a listener who had a property. And as I recall, I couldn't really answer him because I hadn't looked at this issue in a long time. But he said that he had a property on Lake Michigan, I believe he said. If you're listening, you can call in if you want to with details. But he said that a friend of his would go and visit that property and would pay the property taxes for a 20-year period. And he was the one who paid the property taxes and visited the property. And the question was adverse possession. And that is a very unique and strange little quirky law. It's basically a law in almost all states. But in Illinois, it basically says it allows a trespasser of a property, whether it's of the entire property or maybe someone who's trespassing on a piece of your property, a neighbor, for instance, it allows that trespasser to gain legitimate title over the original owner. And what happens is they have to possess the land, okay, or the parcel of the land, and it has to be without permission of the actual owner, and it has to be open and notorious, which means that you can't be hiding it, and it has to be continuous for a 20-year period. Or you have to have a deed to the property and have paid property taxes for 7 years. So there's these very strange little rules about how this works. And if you have any questions about that, you should definitely talk to a real estate lawyer, because what you don't want to do is allow someone to use your property, someone to pay taxes, someone to take that property within your permission, and then you may lose that land, or you may lose that parcel of land, or you may lose the right to use that driveway, or whatever the situation might be. Well, taking your legal calls, 312-981-7200. Give us a call here. The lines are wide open. Steve Stone joins the Steve Cochran Show Monday at 8:40 a.m. with his perspective on White Sox and the rest of the baseball league. Taking your legal calls, 312-981-7200. Text to 312-981-7200. Hi, Michael. Welcome to WGN.
Hi.
Yes, your question.
Okay, I'm so sorry about that. Okay, my ex, she met me at church today. Told me I've got to help her with the student loans to pay off the student loans for our daughters. She took sole custody after our divorce, and my daughters, now they're grown up and they're both in their 20s, but they both graduated from college. She told me I need to help her pay off the student loans, which I never realized that that's what I had to do until this morning.
Okay, Michael, but, did you sign anything to guarantee the student loans?
I don't remember. And also, some years ago, I was drinking, okay? Now, I'm not drinking now, so I got a clear mind. Okay. I don't remember if I actually signed anything or not.
Well, that's not going to be an excuse or a defense. But did you ever go to court to determine who was going to pay college? Was that ever something that a judge decided?
No.
Okay.
I've always pretty much taken her word for things, but she is pretty much known to say things that aren't necessarily always 100%.
Okay.
So I just want to make sure that, of course, would help my daughters.
Well,
with them all along.
No. All right. I'm going to put you on hold. The issue of student loans is, I mean, morally, what you want to do with your daughters is your call. If you want to help your daughters out by paying student loans, that's your deal. So I'm just going to give you the legal analysis of this. Basically, if one parent wants the other parent to contribute to college, whether that's pay student loans, pay tuition, pay room and board, pay any of those expenses, you have to go to court. If the other side does not agree, you go to court and you ask the judge for what we call contribution to education. And the court will decide, do you have enough assets? Do you have enough income? Who's making what? What does the child need? Does the child have scholarships? Are there loans available? And the law says that the court can award contribution to education up to what U of I costs. So at any given time, U of I might, the tuition might be $31,000 or $32,000 these days. That includes books and room and board and those types of things. That's the most that the court could award one parent or both parents together. So if you never went to court and the judge never ruled that you had to pay, and now there's these student loans that are coming due, you don't have a legal obligation to pay them. Okay, you can't go back and now say we want a contribution. You have to do it before the expense is incurred. So it sounds to me like, first of all, I mean, you need to see the paperwork. You need to see if you signed something. If you forgot that you signed something, you might want to go back and look at that. And you might want to ask her where the court order is that requires you to do that. And there probably isn't one. And if there are those two things are not present, then you have no legal obligation to pay the student loans. But one of the things that our listeners should think about, and now is the time where some students in high school are starting to look at colleges. Usually it's a process that starts now for the following school year. So it's now's the time to be thinking about that. If you are divorced, and if you have, hopefully you and your spouse or ex-spouse are on good terms with each other, and hopefully you can agree to split costs in a way that makes sense for both of you and your child, go ahead and agree to that. But if you can't, you're going to have to go to court and file a motion to contribute to college, and the judge will then decide if and how much that contribution will be. But you need to do it before your child goes, not afterwards, because the court will not award it after the fact. Okay? Let's go to a texter. Again, the numbers are 312-981-7200, both the phone and the text. My girlfriend says that if you get fired from a job, the employer must give a reason and must go through arbitration. Is that correct? I stated that they can fire you at will. You win on that one, Margaret, in Bridgeport. Absolutely. You people think that there is an employee's rights are very minimal in most states and in Illinois as well, which means that you are an employee at will. This is different if you have a contract or if you're a member of a union, then different rules apply. But if you're a regular worker in a job, they can fire you for no reason, no reason at all, an incorrect reason, and a reason that doesn't make sense. So I always tell people, if you've been working at a job for 30 years and someone says, I don't like your green shoes, and you say, boss, I'm wearing red shoes, they can still fire you for wearing green shoes. So you don't have a right to be fired for a right reason. You don't have a right to be told why. And you don't have a right to go to arbitration. So the only thing that you can sue over is if you are fired for being a member of a protected class. And what that means is that because you're a woman, because you're pregnant, because you're Muslim, because you're from another country, because you're a certain religion, because you're gay, because you have a certain military status. Those are protected classes. And if an age, I'll throw age in there. And if you're fired for those reasons or any one of those reasons, then you do have recourse to file with the EEOC or the Illinois equivalent of that, which is the Illinois Department of Human Rights. And what you do is you file a claim. It's free of charge. They investigate it. And if they find cause that you were actually fired or demoted for an inappropriate reason, then you have a right to get a lawyer and to go to court on that. So, but you're right, Margaret, you win. You win the bet on that one. All right. Let's go to, I don't know if is this Baron? Baron? Hi, Baron. Welcome to WGN. Hello? Nope. Nope. All right. Well, you'll tell me. We'll tell me when we're ready for that call. One of the other texters. Okay. One of the other texters. I'm not going to get to that. That's pretty much the same question that we had before. But let me talk about another issue that we had from last week. And that was, we had a woman who said that she had rented a house. I believe it was a house or a two flat, and she had rented for a number of years. I want to say 20 years. And she wanted to know if the security deposit that she'd put down 20 years ago was accruing interest, so that if she left the property, she would get the interest on that security deposit. And you need to look at the laws of where you live. Not only are there laws that are state laws that have certain requirements, but the local municipalities like Chicago might have its own set of rules as well. So I believe she said she lived in Chicago. And so in Chicago, yes, you are entitled to a security deposit and interest on the security deposit. But the law says that if there have to be a certain number of units of the building, so there in Chicago, there has to be 6 units in order for these laws to apply. In this case, I believe what she told me was that she was either in a two flat or a single family dwelling, so therefore she would not be entitled to the interest on that security deposit. All right, Preston. Hi, Preston. Welcome to WGN.
Thank you.
What's your legal question?
I had some business property that had an advertised sign on it, sold the sign separately from the property, and the company that bought the property kept my money from the sale to undo the sale of the sign.
Okay, so you have a property that is a building, correct, or just the business itself?
It was land with a business on it at that time.
Okay, so you sold it to XYZ, but you sold the signage, the actual physical signage, to somebody else, correct?
Correct.
And how did the buyer get the money from the sale of the sign?
At the closing.
Okay, why was it part of the closing? If you sold it separately, why would it be part of the closing on the business?
I'm not sure.
Okay. All right, so that doesn't really make sense. How much is the sign worth?
$110,000.
Oh, my goodness. And what about the person who bought the sign? Are they upset because they didn't get the sign that they paid for?
No, they're going to make $1 million off the sign from advertising. I'm a sign.
All right. You know what? I think you're going to need to call me or email me because I'm missing some facts here, because I understood that you sold the sign to someone and you sold the business to somebody else, and somehow the person you sold the business to got the sign. But I may be confused. So why don't you, I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm going to give you my numbers at the office, 312-332-7800 or WGN at AskKarenConti.com. We're going to continue to take calls. The lines are open. Call us here, 312-981-7200. Let's call this song exactly what it is. What it is. It's a funky and learn I'm feeling. In the hips from left to right. What it is, I might be doing. Welcome back to the Karen Conti Show. I'm taking your legal calls here, 312-981-7200, 981-7200. If you don't get through or you want to speak in a little bit of a more private setting, you can always call me at the office, 312-332-7800, or email me, even better. You can give me some details, quick details, facts about where you live, what it is you're looking for, when the incident happened, WGN at AskKarenConti.com. Let's go to Katie. Hi, Katie. Welcome to WGN. What's your legal question?
Hi, I am a 55-year-old who is going back into the teaching field after raising my family, and the what I'm finding is that school districts are saying that they're only hiring first-year teachers. Is that not age discrimination?
Oh, that's a really hard one, because when it comes to any kind of discrimination, Katie, it's hard to prove, because you're never going to have someone say, Katie, you look like you're 55 years old, and we really want young teachers in here. We don't want older teachers. They're never going to say that. So, you know, the problem is that you're never going to really know the answer. You're going to get a feeling that they're not hiring you because they would rather have someone younger for whatever reason. But I think, you know, I think the bottom line is that they can't discriminate against you based upon age. They shouldn't be able to do that. Now, did you have teaching experience before?
Yes.
So maybe what they're saying to you, and this is would be legitimate, is that you have 10 years of experience, you're coming in as a 10-year experienced teacher, and what we're really looking for is an entry-level teacher, and we're not willing to pay somebody who's their 10th or 11th year. We need somebody who's a first year. Now, you and I both know that could be true and it could not be true, that maybe it is your age that they're discriminating against. But the legal answer to your question is no, they can't discriminate based upon age. But the problem is, how do you tell that, and then what do you do about it? You know, it's hard to sue someone when you don't know why they made that decision, nor do you probably want to. You just want to get back into the workforce and become employed again. So, sorry I don't have a better answer, but that's really what the law is. Okay?
So it's perfectly legal for them to say it's a budget thing?
Yeah. They can,
okay.
You know, they absolutely can. And frankly, you know, when I look for lawyers, sometimes I want to hire a lawyer. I might want to hire a lawyer who's 10 years out of school because I need somebody who's senior. I need someone with that level of experience. And with that level of experience, they bill more, you know, my clients, they have a higher rate. Sometimes I'm looking for someone who's an entry level, and I want an entry level because she doesn't bill, you know, at the high rate of a 10-year associate. So I certainly can discriminate based upon their level of experience, but I certainly cannot discriminate based solely on age.
Okay.
That makes sense. I know. It's complicated. But good luck. I hope you find a job. It sounds like you would be a great teacher. And just you'll keep at it and you'll get a job. All right.
Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Take care. Let's go to Brian. Hi, Brian. Welcome to WGN.
Hello, Journey. Good evening.
Hi. You can call me Karen.
Okay.
Okay, Brian, what's your legal question?
My wife, she holds a key position in a school, and the moment she was promoted, the owner promised quarterly bonus, but turned out to be the first year, 2016, there have been some quarters unpaid. So she just let it ride and then continued on 2017. But it's not exactly a bonus, but it seems like a salary because there have been deductions on the promised $10,000 every quarter. And it she's not getting it in full because there's deductions and all that. Now, at the end of 2018, the first quarter, the owner fired her, but did not give her last $10,000 for that quarter.
Okay, Brian, let me just interrupt you because I have just a short period of time before the break. You said it's a school, but it's a private school?
Yes.
Okay, because that didn't make sense if they were paying bonuses on a public school. Okay, generally speaking, if they promise you something, you're entitled to it. It would be great if it were in writing, but you're saying it was an oral promise to pay the bonuses, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
And the only consistent payment they did was 2017. They paid a portion in 2016.
Okay.
And the last quarter of 2018, they did not.
Okay. So here's what you do. You would go to the Illinois Department of Labor, Wage and Claim Division, and you fill out a form for unpaid wages, and you tell them what the promise was, who made it to you, to your wife, and you will show them proof that they actually paid that bonus on at least one occasion. I'm going to put you on hold here because there's some noise. And so you'll fill out those paperwork. You don't have to pay any filing fee. And the Illinois Department of Labor will do some research, and they'll call the employer, and they'll verify certain things, and they'll come up with a ruling as to whether or not the employer owes those unpaid bonuses. My guess is they're going to say they need to be paid based upon certain milestones, or they need to be paid based upon performance, and they're probably going to say the performance wasn't good enough to get that bonus. If you are getting a job and you're being promised commissions and bonuses, get it in writing. Get it in writing. Otherwise, it's very hard to make the argument. I'm not saying you're not going to win. I'm not saying that your wife is not going to get her commissions and her bonuses, but it's much easier when you have a writing. We're still taking your legal calls all the way up to the top of the hour. 312-981-7200. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN.
Baby, baby, sweet baby. There's something that I've just got to
You still have time to get your calls in. 312-981-7200. Am I going to Natalie? Yes, I'm going to Natalie. Hi, Natalie. Welcome to WGN.
Hi.
Hi.
I hope I can get this straight and quick for you.
Okay.
My debit card was dinged for a locksmith to make a key for a car. Okay, it was not my vehicle. It was not my son's vehicle. So a key was not made, but they felt that they could charge $400 because they traveled to make a key, but they only received the code from the dealership.
Wait, I'm not understanding what you said. Your debit card got dinged $400 for making a what?
A key for a new car.
Okay, who charged it?
A locksmith.
Okay, and how did they get your debit card?
My son had it, and it's, young guys, and just kind of a mess. And so the locksmith is there, and the person that should have paid for it was not there. So my son, thinking that he was obligated because he had the keys and they were lost, and then they were found.
Okay, Natalie, I think what you're saying is your son used the card, but he shouldn't have used the card, and now you don't want to pay for it because he shouldn't have paid for it. Is that what happened?
Yeah, he shouldn't have paid for it, but I have been dinged already.
There's probably nothing you can do. I don't know if your debit card allows you to challenge the charge. You're probably not going to win on it because he did have the authority to use your card. He used it, and you probably don't have a defense on that. So, unfortunately, you probably are going to have to pay that. Okay?
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Karen.
All right. You're welcome. Bye. There are some texters that I want to go through quickly, but give us a call here, 981-7200. I had an 847 area code say President Trump can pardon Paul Manafort in the trial that's going on right now, but can he pardon Manafort in the next trial? And that's interesting. And the answer is you're right on this. The case that's going on right now in Virginia is a federal case, and it's federal charges, federal money laundering, bank fraud, tax fraud, and those types of charges. If he gets convicted, President Trump could pardon him because it is a federal set of charges. And a president can only pardon on federal charges, not on state charges. There are also charges pending against Paul Manafort in Washington, D.C., and that is a state court. And if those charges go forward and there's a trial on it and he's convicted, President Trump cannot pardon him because those are state charges. So it seems like the feds kind of orchestrated this maybe together to kind of make sure that these charges are going to be stick one way or the other. And obviously, it's pretty obvious to me that they're looking to get him to cooperate against somebody else, whether that's President Trump or not. I'm not sure. But that's you're right about that. 847 area code, the law. Oh, the 847 area code said they didn't like the law that says that people can be fired for any reason at all. How do we get the law changed? Well, generally speaking, the law is very consistent in all of the states that you can't make employers have legitimate reasons to fire somebody, unless it's for one of those protected classes that we're talking about. Because you really do need to give employers the right to have the people in their jobs who you want. So, for instance, maybe I don't like somebody in my office because they're just not connecting with my clients. They're not sympathetic. Maybe they're a good lawyer, but maybe they just don't do well with the clients. And I can't have someone in my office who's working on my cases because it doesn't make my clients happy and it doesn't resolve their problems as it should. I have a right to do that. Do I have to have a tangible reason? Do I have to have written warnings? Do I have to have a scale that says on a scale of 1 to 10, you're 2 and therefore I'm firing you? No. I can fire you for any reason. I would hope, and I think most employers, you know, have some sort of conscience and they don't want to be firing people. But then there are employers who don't have a conscience and will fire you for reasons that may not be legitimate to you, but the law just doesn't really provide an avenue for recourse in that. And generally speaking, what I tell people is this. If you get fired from a job, terminated, laid off, you want to move on. Bringing a lawsuit against an employer will drag you down, whether you have to pay lawyers fees to do that, whether you do it on a contingency, meaning the lawyer takes the case. You kind of want to move on because when you have a bad breakup like that, it kind of keeps you back in that area and it keeps you in a mode where maybe you're not going to get a better job and you're not going to find something else because you're kind of living in the past. So even though it's very difficult to be fired from a job, some of the cases are really horrible and heart-wrenching as people put their lives into their jobs. But it's best to move on. It's best to try to settle with them, get a good recommendation, make sure the personnel file looks good so that you have an ability to support yourself and your family in the future by moving on. There was a 708 area code texter who said that she was married in March of 2000, but has not seen her spouse since 2008. So you haven't seen your spouse in 10 years. How can I get divorced without paying the $600? There really is no way to do that. I assume that this is in Cook County. In Cook County, you have a filing fee of about $320, which means to file the divorce for petition for divorce, which starts the whole process. Even in a simplified divorce, that's what the cost is. And then there's an appearance fee, meaning the person who is responding has to pay about $200. So all in all, you have a little over $500 that you have to pay to get a divorce. And that's if everything's uncontested, and that's if everything's agreed upon, and you don't have property, and you don't have children, and you just want to file the paperwork. There's no way to get around that I'm aware of. You can always call the clerk's office if there's some way to get around that. If you're indigent, don't have the money for it, maybe there's something that I'm not aware of. But generally speaking, everyone has to pay those filing fees. So we had any other calls? Any other calls, Ben? No? No one's on the line. You know, my friend Vic Cohen is still here. Vic, you're here. You're still awake.
Yes, I'm riveted. I'm on the edge of my seat.
Oh, yes. Okay. Now, you had a question during one of the breaks about one of the high-profile cases that's going on now with the guy who supposedly murdered his pregnant wife.
Yeah, this guy in Colorado allegedly even admitted to the police that he had killed his two young daughters and his wife at the time, who was pregnant with, turns out to be a son. It's been revealed, at least in the news. That's what's reported. I was just curious. This guy's he supposedly admitted to the police that he did this. Now he's allegedly saying he didn't do it. He's got a defense attorney. Is that a strategy? Yeah. Even if you've admitted to doing something, you always plead not guilty, yeah, no matter what?
You almost always plead not guilty at the very first court appearance. And here's why. You got a lawyer, and maybe he's going to argue that it's not murder. Maybe he's going to argue it's manslaughter because he found out something horrible and he was upset. Or maybe it was the heat of the moment while they were fighting. It's going to be hard to really understand what his defense is going to be. But when you're a defense lawyer, and I've been a criminal defense lawyer, you tell your client, we're going to plead not guilty. If at some point we're going to plead guilty to something, we will certainly do that. But you don't want to do that right at first. There's no reason to do that. It's expected that you're going to plead not guilty. And then let the chips fall. Let's see where the evidence is. And let's see what defenses are there. And let's cut a deal so that we can get the best deal for the client.
Okay. I have one more question if you have the time.
And that just not much.
Okay. I love police videos, and so many people have been recording themselves when they get arrested by the police or pulled over. Is that something you suggest is a good idea? Is it legal in Chicago and Illinois?
No, it's definitely legal in Chicago. It's definitely legal in Illinois. There's specific laws on it. I don't know. I mean, if you feel that's appropriate because you want to make sure that you get your justice, I know it angers police officers. I mean, you know, you have to always play that game. Do you anger the police officer by turning on the camera? Or do you just take your chances and hope that he's going to understand while you're recording him? I mean, it's basically you're getting in his face and you're accusing him of maybe possibility of doing something wrong. Right. And I frankly would rather just be courteous to the police officer, put my hands on the steering wheel, you know, comply with what they're going to do and trust that they're going to do a good job and be professional in return. That would be my view.
That's how I did.
Anyway, if anyone wants to give me a call at the office, 312-332-7800 or wjan@askkarenconti.com. Victor Cohen, thank you.
Thank you
to my producer. Thank you to Jerry, my husband, and the Academy. This is Karen Conti on WGN.